Good morning, everyone. I'm John Hockenberry. The agenda is being set from Tehran this morning.
Our government.
Healthcare.
Your government.
The economy.
Bailout.
Global financial recession.
Transportation.
Agenda.
Agenda.
The work that needs to be done.
We begin the week with a discussion of Tehran with our friend Marcus Mabry, international business editor for the New York Times, here in the studio. Marcus, first of all, good morning.
Good morning.
Looking at what's been going on, Ahmadinejad, the incumbent, was named president. It was suggested that it's a landslide, 63% of the vote going to Ahmadinejad. The questions of legitimacy of this result are certainly being asked by people on the streets of Tehran. You heard the sounds a moment ago of demonstrations yesterday. There are even more today. How seriously does the Obama administration have to take these questions of legitimacy, or does the administration just back away?
Well, it's a tough position they're in. The problem with Iran has always been the fact that in this country you have two issues. You have a divided polity, and on one side you have conservatives who are worried about the U.S. and the loss of Iranian power relative to this region and want to assert Iran's power. On the other hand, you have moderates who actually are incredibly modern. You have, in many ways, the Islamic country that is in many ways has the most intelligent, developed middle class and class of intellectuals in the region. So you have these two different Irans that exist side by side, and right now what the administration is watching is the two clash in the streets of Tehran and throughout the country, as you have a youth movement that supports the opposition that could in fact become an underground that even if the Ayatollahs come out and say that they support this election result of Ahmadinejad coming back to office, could create a kind of underground, underlying problem for years to come for this regime.
Well, there's an interesting issue there. Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei has suggested that they're going to investigate fraud claims. He's backed away from the sort of blanket congratulatory message over the weekend to Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. That seems to be a cautionary approach on the part of the Supreme Leader.
It is a huge surprise, and because no one really expected that result. They expected that once they'd come out, they were not going to reverse position. And the fact that they have is that they understand the threat posed by their own polity and their own youth, in effect. So this is the administration's challenge is, as the U.S., how do you ride this tiger? Do you encourage this dissent, maybe even privately, maybe covertly, rather than openly.
Except that's a dangerous game. I mean,
it's
you're stepping
game.
Into a regime change policy. The Obama administration
regime
there,
change usually implies change from the United States, brought often with our own military might. This is quite different, and this would be a longer term engagement if the administration were to choose to take that route.
Stakes are very, very high. Joining us now, BBC diplomatic correspondent Jonathan Marcus from London. Jonathan, good morning. And I gather the BBC is having some difficulty getting information out of Tehran in the wake of this election.
Well, there's been an awful lot of interference with both communications signals and indeed our radio and online signals. Getting in touch with our correspondents there, often by satellite telephone, to some extent by email. But it's a very confused, a very volatile picture still. And we understand now that President Ahmadinejad, I suppose we still must call him that, is not going to be heading to the Shanghai Cooperation Council meeting in Russia, as was expected. It looks now as though he's going to be staying at home. So that's an indication, perhaps, of the dynamics that are going on.
Jonathan, at the very least, aftermath has disrupted events in Tehran. We spoke a moment ago about Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei suggesting there will be an investigation of fraud charges. You've suggested that Ahmadinejad has canceled a trip to Russia. What is the importance of seeing Mir Hussein Mousavi, the opposition candidate, whose whereabouts I believe are unknown at this hour, seeing him in public? Is the international community going to push for that?
I think there's going to be a great deal of caution. I mean, I think one has to remember, looking at this, there are probably many, many forces at work in terms of the popular upsurge of feelings. I mean, clearly, some don't like the regime as a whole and would like to replace it with something very different. You have to remember, though, that all of the candidates in the election were people who were vetted by the existing regime. They were all elements within the really rather conservative Islamic ruling elite of the country. So I think one has to be cautious. I mean, to see this simply as a sort of an Iranian velvet revolution or comparisons with Tiananmen Square and so on, I think all those comparisons one should be very, very cautious about using. Something absolutely fascinating and dramatic is happening, but quite where it's going to lead shouldn't be coloured, if you like, by these sorts of international comparisons.
One last question on Iran, Jonathan. The Bush administration, and it seems the U.S. policymakers, fairly consistently responded to Mahmoud Ahmadinejad by confronting him every step of the way, and it seemed to me the net effect of that was to inflate his power within Iran and within the international community. Do you think it's time to depart from that, perhaps step away from Ahmadinejad, let him sort out his domestic agenda and allow the sort of tit-for-tat confrontation to go by the wayside?
Well, look, it's clear the American administration has been waiting until the aftermath of these elections to really roll out this new policy of engagement with Tehran. Clearly, the uncertainties now inside Iran mean that that is going to be delayed. Clearly, Washington cannot choose who it deals with in Tehran. I think what's going to be crucial, all of the signals coming from the Obama administration suggest that when the situation clarifies there, this engagement policy will continue. I think there is little choice but to do that. The question is, what sort of engagement is the Obama administration really intending? Is this going to be some sort of comprehensive approach, what some have called a grand bargain, that would touch on all of the outstanding issues between Washington and Tehran? Or would it be something rather more limited, step by step, something that perhaps conservative voices in Tehran would simply dismiss as the same old rhetoric, the same old approach? So I think the ball to some extent will be in President Obama's court, but he cannot serve that ball, if you want to extend the
there
analogy,
you go. There
the metaphor,
you go, Jonathan.
Until obviously the situation in Tehran becomes clearer.
A complicated ball, or is it a badminton? It's a complicated serve, no matter what. Talk about engagement, Marcus Mabry. Netanyahu, the Israeli Prime Minister, gave an important policy speech over the weekend. The Obama administration has already called it a step forward, but is it?
Yes, it is. Certainly, when it comes from Netanyahu, who is a conservative Israeli, and the fact that he has acknowledged the need for a two-state solution, as it were, a Palestinian state, that's progress for those who want to see that roadmap advance toward a two-state solution in the Middle East.
The Palestinians really criticized the fact that it seemed as though he was inflexible on Jerusalem, inflexible on a right of return for Palestinians, inflexible even about talking about those issues, which is at odds with the whole Arab nexus.
It is, but the fact is he's not the first Israeli politician to come out on that side. Even centrist politicians and some leftist politicians have said the same things about right of return and Jerusalem being indivisible as the Israeli capital. But what's interesting here is going to be the settlement issue. He said that it's fine for them to construct settlements. Again, not unheard of amongst his predecessors. It's going to be interesting to see how the administration comes out and walks this delicate line between encouraging him, because it is, when it comes to Netanyahu, these are steps forward. And if any Israeli leader is going to be able to actually advance this goal of a two-state solution in the end, it would have to be a kind of Nixon to China moment, and Netanyahu could be the leader to do that. His predecessors certainly weren't in that position. The administration's position is going to be, how do you encourage that and at the same time let the world, the Palestinians, our European allies who support often the Palestinian cause, realize that the U.S. is still an honest broker and can actually work on both sides of the street and help bring these two sides together. I think this was only an opening gambit. I don't think this is at all a final bid, and you can't argue that the things that Netanyahu called for instance, a state that was unable to make any alliances with any foreign country would have be completely demilitarized, and have the United States in effect be the security barrier between the two sides.
You're referring to Netanyahu possible. Calling for a totally demilitarized Palestinian state, which
exactly.
Isn't right. All right, Jonathan, Marcus, the wild card here may be George Mitchell, the U.S. Middle East envoy in Syria. Can Damascus create some momentum here from the side?
Well, of course, what's interesting is that Mr. Netanyahu, in his speech, only referred to Syria, I think, once. He didn't mention the Golan Heights specifically. Some Israeli analysts are seeing that as a bid, if you like, a gambit, a signal to both Damascus and Washington that perhaps Mr. Netanyahu might be more willing to try and engage on the Syrian track. I think the Mitchell visit to Syria over the weekend is interesting. We obviously haven't got a particularly detailed readout of what was said there. One of the things, of course, the Americans want from the Syrians is to try and bring pressure to bear on Hamas in the Gaza Strip to try and push towards Palestinian unity, because I think it's quite clear that Syria, without a Palestinian unity government, there isn't going to be much progress.
And Syria has leverage there. Jonathan Marcus, BBC diplomatic correspondent, thanks as always. Marcus Mabry, this morning I come in, I say, we've got to have time to talk about health care. I think it's fairly clear if we can't do it, it's going to be hard for the Obama administration to get to it this week. We got to go, Marcus. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Getting to health care. It's the Obama administration's challenge and ours here on The Agenda.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.